Friday, July 4th, 1924, 3:10 p.m., en route to Karachi, India. For almost 4 hours, the flight continued without incident on the 455-mile flight to Karachi at an altitude of 6,000 feet. Without warning, Eric's engine suddenly exploded, shedding white-hot molten pieces of metal, which made several holes in the wings and damaged the struts of the New Orleans. Smith and Wade saw the white puffs of smoke coming from Nelson's stricken airplane as it slowed markedly. They throttled back and flew around the New Orleans. Increasingly large, dark streaks of oil stained the fuselage. Nelson looked around for a suitable landing place, but the ground beneath them was baked mud with huge cracks, some several feet wide and deep. A landing would certainly destroy the airplane and probably kill them in the process. They didn't know it at the time, but a piston had disintegrated and both exhaust springs were hurled out of the exhaust stacks. The unrestrained exhaust valve was ingested into the cylinder. It combined with pieces of cracked piston, causing the connecting rod and wrist pin to break and hurling those parts out through the bottom of the crankcase. With chunks of white-hot metal being flung in all directions and highly flammable lubricating oil being pumped through the cracked walls of the engine, the situation looked very grave. Several chunks sliced through the cowling, wing, and strut, narrowly missing decapitating Eric Nelson as he stood in the cockpit to watch for the first signs of fire. The crews of the other cruisers stood by and watched helplessly as their stricken companions fought to keep the New Orleans in the air. Normally, the propellers of the cruisers rotated at 1,640 revolutions per minute. Eric's engine was shaking violently, and any attempt to increase its speed over 1,100 RPM was met with a volley of banging and crashing and a fusillade of hot metal pieces coming out the exhaust. This was barely enough to sustain the airplane in level flight, and the airspeed decayed to just above the stall speed of the New Orleans. The temperature gauge of the stricken ship climbed as the oil pressure dropped. Jack reached for a piece of cheesecloth, wiped the oil as best he could from his goggles, hair, and face, and passed the cloth to Eric to do the same. Eric removed his gloves and controlled the aircraft with only the tips of his bare fingers. Any large deflection of the aircraft's control surfaces could reduce its speed, precipitating a fatal stall and spin. The overheated engine occasionally locked solid, the propellers stopping suddenly. Nelson lowered the nose of the airplane, diving it down to within inches of the ground. In the dive, the increased airspeed cooled the engine down sufficiently for the air blast to cause the propeller to rotate again, and with a mighty backfire, the Liberty would start running again. Eric would then struggle to coax the dying engine into pulling the flying machine back up to a higher altitude. As long as the engine continued rotating, the other cylinders of the damage-tolerant Liberty 12 might get them to safety. Eric knew the critical factor would be oil. When all the oil in the tank had been pumped overboard, all the bearings throughout the engine would disintegrate. The engine would seize within seconds, and no amount of cooling would help. The inhospitable terrain would rip and tear at the soft belly of the New Orleans until a wheel caught in one of the myriad cracks and crevices below. The airplane would cartwheel, turning over on its back, crumbling wings, fuselage, and tail surfaces. He'd seen it many times before and had buried most of the pilots. Even if they were lucky enough to survive the crash, for them the flight would be over. Smith signaled Arnold to take control of the Chicago while he measured the distance on his chart to Karachi and calculated the time remaining. They would need 40 more minutes. Lowell pointed at his watch and held up 10 fingers 4 times to Eric. Could he keep his stricken ship flying for another 40 minutes? Would the oil last? To Eric Nelson, each minute seemed like an eternity. The oil was still staining the windshield and fuselage. Now the stains were his friends. When they stopped, he would know the oil was gone, and the engine would soon overheat and seize. The water temperature gauge was pegged in the danger area as the diminishing water and oil reserves overheated with the task of cooling.